right into the mainstream. I really do.
Whole society conscription Canada.
Well, this is the solution that countries that actually share our values and are in similar positions to us, Sweden, Finland, France.
To inflict a maximum pain on America.
If they cross the border.
My colleague James introduced me to the concept of graystoning or grayrocking. Have you heard this?
No. What's that?
Graystoning, also known as grayrocking, is a communication technique used to disengage from emotionally toxic interactions by becoming emotionally unresponsive and unengaged like a gray rock.
They should call this Canadizing.
Yeah, the goal is to neutralize the toxic individual's attention-seeking behavior by withholding emotional reactions.
Definitely correct.
Providing minimal responses. How does it work? You limit emotional engagement. Yeah. You provide short neutral responses. You do not share personal information. You maintain distance, and you recognize and manage emotional reactions. And the context under which James brought this up to me was Mark Carney is graystoning Trump.
100%.
Trump wants somebody who he understands a threat.
Yeah.
What do you do with a threat? You dominate it.
No. Any threat
Trudeau
that he responds.
Trudeau is not a threat, but Trudeau, you can get an emotional, you can humiliate him.
Yep.
But Carney is sort of, he's a gray rock. He's like, okay, this guy's not disrespecting me. He's not challenging me. He's not as strong as me.
He doesn't give emotional speeches about will Canada survive after a threat.
He just says
we're not talking to these people.
That's right. And there's not much to be gained because nobody, like, he's so dull that, like, I don't even need to put him in headlines with me. It doesn't get me much.
Yeah.
So move on. Somebody else is more, and I don't know how to deal with this guy. This is boring to me. That's a different thing than making it painful. That's like maybe Canada's technique is to make it as boring as possible.
Boring and painful, right? Like you're just not giving him anything, right? Like that's the key thing. Don't give him anything. Uh-huh. And certainly don't try to be his friend. Right. Like, that's the very worst thing that you can do. Right. Like, what people who are his friends, they always end up like half as rich as they were before and like in jail. Right. Like, you know, you don't want to be anywhere close to friendly to this guy. Like, who was it who said Kissinger, who said
America has no friends?
No, he said it can be terrible to be America's enemy, but the worst thing is to be America's friend.
Ah, right? Like a deeper Kissinger cut.
No one recovers from that. You know, one of the things I find fascinating about the entire way that all media deals with Trump is that they kind of are under the assumption that the craziness is in the past. And now we're dealing with the fallout from that craziness, but then there's going to be like, he's going to deal strategically there's only more craziness to come.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is not like suddenly calm down. Right? Like, he said he's going to annex us last month. Next month, he could say something even more insane or do something even more insane. You know, I sort of believe that Trump is not capable of doing anything. Right. Like, I don't think he's capable of building anything. I don't think he's capable of conquering anything. I think that requires planning and cohesion. You have to get people on board and you have to build things. But, you know, I think we should very much worry about the year 2028. I think that is a very scary year for us because, you know, it is the classic authoritarian playbook. You know, you could read Tim Snyder on, like, Donald Trump's rhetoric and how it mirrors almost exactly Putin's rhetoric about Ukraine. And authoritarian societies, to defeat their own constitutions, often go to war with their neighbors, right? That is a classic ploy. Like, we can't have an election, we're at war, right? The decline of American institutions are very much a threat to us.
I think that you're making some very strong points about what it would be rational and just sane in the interest of self-preservation to prepare for.
Yes.
Right? It's only
that's what I'm trying to do. I think that's actually kind of my job right now, to try and figure that out. Because we haven't there's no tradition of asking these questions, right?
Who elected you?
I elected me.
Try to figure out whatever problem you want to.
Yeah.
It's a writer's life. But, okay.
Exactly.
So, like, yes, why assume that the chaos is over? It might be just starting. Why?
No. We know that it is just starting. That is certain.
Okay. Why assume that we could ever go back? Why assume that this relationship? Okay, let's agree that those are things we can no longer safely assume, and we prepare for whatever we must prepare for.
Mm.
And let's hope that we're wrong.
Yeah.
Because, like, here's the Economic Times, like, 47 minutes ago. Early midterm polls reveal growing voter shift towards Democrats as Trump's GOP faces backlash over economy, immigration, and approval ratings. Some would say,
Jesse, didn't we just begin the show with us being in a panel saying we know what's going to happen in the last election, and then us saying, oh, wait, we got it completely wrong? Like, that's where we started here.
We did, and we just did like a good half hour or more of the sky is falling, get your gun. So I'm just saying, what if we're overreacting? What if this guy has blown his wad in the first 100 days? And I heard Ezra Klein saying the way that this all catches up with him is that he creates so much chaos that it starts to eat his own presidency.
But think about that reality for us.
Yeah, there's
like the choice here is America exploding or America collapsing, right? Those are the options, right? And either way, we want to be really far away from these
people. You're confident about that?
I did write a book called The Next Civil War, looking at deep trends. I think, look what's happened to America.
You did write a book.
Look at the legal system.
Yeah.
Look at what's happened to the courts. I mean, you can win a court. You can win a case at the Supreme Court of the United States, and that result has no effect on what happens to you.
What if the checks and balances prevail and he is kept in check by midterms?
Then the decline of America.
Push back and Harvard pushes back, and he's out in 4 years. I don't disagree with you that this is a guy he's given us every indication that he's playing out of the authoritarian's playbook, and that we should expect military conflict or rewriting the rules. But what if their system is resilient enough to stop that from happening?
But Trump is not the problem here. Trump is a symptom of an American that is a textbook case of a country headed for civil war. Right, like it is a textbook. Like you have the collapse of law, you have the turning government into spoils. This is the kind of stuff like you can go to textbooks and like it spells out what happens. And when Trump is gone, all that stuff is going to remain. In fact, what's about to happen is that the hyperpartisanship, the incredible income inequality, the horizontal and vertical inequality, the decline of trust in institutions, the decline of the legal system is about to have massive quantities of poverty poured over it. And it will be like gasoline. Even the best case scenario for America escaping this, that's not an America. We want to get out of this business.
Right. All right, six of one, half a dozen of the other, because whether this is something that we need to prepare for and might not happen, or whether it's something that like one version of it is going to happen, certainly, either way, we have to prepare for it.
Yeah.
So let's end where we began. Is this Canadian choice in this election that the world is turning to and saying, Stephen Marsh, please explain this to us, because we really are looking towards Canada as the first to start to mount a resistance, and you worry that, I don't know, I was going to say entropy, but I think you used a different word.
Well, complacency.
Complacency.
I'm worried about that more in the structure.
It's still the same team.
Yep.
It's still the Liberal Party of Canada. It's still
That's
the
not
Canadians.
Cynical. I'm worried about that.
Is this choice representative of the resistance that you're currently writing about? Or, and you alluded to this as well when you began, Mark Carney just inherited a sandwich. And it's an incredibly tough fight. He's got a minority government. He's going to have problems out west. And it's going to be hard for him to get anything done, even if he knows exactly what to do.
You know, he does have an advantage that he doesn't really care about whether anyone likes him. It's a big advantage in politics, right?
And other things.
And other things, right? I don't really like the term resistance here. Like, that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about survival, right? We're talking about, like, building a world and Canada in that world where we're not a snack for an authoritarian government.
I think you entered that term into this conversation, but proceed.
I think resistance is your word. I think the audience definitely knows that Jesse Brown throws around the words resistance.
I can swear that you said we're the resistance, but we'll check the record. What is the world's interest in Canada right now?
We're the resistance, man. Some kind of resistance to Donald Trump.
He's part of like the establishment.
But it's resistance to populism. It's resistance to authoritarianism. It's resistance for...
My point here really is that it's not necessarily resistance. We're going to have to come up with some kind of arrangement with the middle powers.
Yeah.
With Europe and with Japan and South Korea, these countries whose values we actually share, because we don't share America's values anymore. Like, we always say we share values. We actually don't share America's values. Like, we share the values with people of the Netherlands and people in France. And I think because of that, that's going to require large-scale institutional reframing. I mean, that's why we're hiring him, right? A friend of mine said to me, if Carney had been conservative, I would have voted conservative.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's totally true, right? This is not really a resounding vote for the Liberal Party. This is a vote for, we want the chief technocrat in the world to run our stuff.
This was a vote very much despite the Liberal
Party. 100%. Yeah.
I figured it out, what you're suggesting.
What's that?
The new Teen Titans. Batman's in the Justice League.
Yeah.
And the Justice League is like...
Teen Titans. I think my kids were too young when
That's Robin's band.
Really?
Yeah, Robin had his own band.
Someone made a show out of just Robin's friends.
Like the sidekicks get together, the middle powers get together.
It was a brilliant cartoon, right? Yeah. I've never seen it, but everyone said it was top-notch.
All right, I'll see you in a year or two. We'll see if any of this
When our predictions turn out to be wrong again, we'll reconvene and discuss why they were so why we were right to make them anyway.
Somehow I'll have the same guest on. Listen, that's your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to write to me about it, I read everything that you write and send in when you send it to jesse@canadaland.com. Also posting here and there on Blue Sky. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Max Collins is Canada Land's director of audio. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about Stop the Steal Canada, actual election illegalities in the North. We'll talk about how life just got even harder for traveling musicians, and we'll talk about Pierre Poilievre's struggle to retain power after his remarkable concession speech.
Now I'll never rule the world. I hate this job.
Wait for that. Julian Abraham, reporter for Canada Land.
Yes. Hello, Jesse Brown.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Questions continue on what comes next for Pierre Poilievre after he lost his seat.
We already see that the knives are out.
The Conservative Party of Canada, I hope they do some soul searching on what they believe it means to be a Conservative.
Last time I checked, Pierre Poilievre never came out. In our election.
I have always been on Team Canada, but Team Canada hasn't always been on Team Alberta.
Julian, it's been a rough week for Pierre Poilievre.
Rough week.
But lucky for him, he has a support system of compassionate Conservatives, a loyal family of fellow travelers across the country, Conservative premiers and MPs who will have his back no matter what, because the C in Canadian Conservatism is for caring.
Yeah, exactly.
We are kidding. No, he's an injured animal in a snake pit. He's like Cobra Commander after taking a loss. You know, Destro and the Baroness are already taking little shots at him just to see how weak he is.
No! How could they do this to me?
That's one way to compare it, yeah.
I know that you've been paying close attention, Julian, to the press right now, because like this is the moment. The door has creaked open for those with their eye on the throne, for challengers to start testing the waters, you know, insinuate their names into the conversation, see how it plays. Like every mutiny starts with hints and rumors, suggestive videos. get circulated. And those who want Pierre Poilievre's job as leader of the Conservatives, you better get your name into circulation now, because pretty soon the field might get too crowded. So take us through it. Who is making moves? Is it Serpentor? Is it Zartan? Is it Dr. Mindbender? Who wants the job?
I haven't heard anything about a conservative run from Serpentor, Zartan, or Dr. Mindbender, actually.
Wow, he's keeping his powder dry. He's moved to the private sector.
Yeah. He's going to be an advisor or a consultant somewhere.
Okay.
No, but I have heard rumors about a potential run from the premier of my home province, Nova Scotia, Tim Houston.
We may be on the rumor stage now. Like, he put out a video that looks suspiciously like a federal campaign video.
You know, a lot of people are making that observation.
The video is striking a chord, but it's also sparked speculation that Houston may be eyeing a higher office.
But I just don't, I don't really see that as evidence of a federal run.
Let's give this a look.
Hey, I've sailed on the Blue Notes and do know that you go to Peggy's Cove for the gingerbread, not just the view. I have asked who your father is, and I give directions based on landmarks that are no longer there. We're the province that invented the modern ice skate. We didn't need Sunny D, we had beef. And road trips hit different when you stopped at Ma Webb's or the chicken burger. Nova Scotians invented the telephone, the odometer, newsprint, and kerosene.
Hold on, stop the video for a sec. This thing with the f***ing odometer.
What?
The odometer was not by any f***ing stretch of the imagination invented in Nova Scotia. It's such bullshit. I grew up hearing this.
Next, you're going to tell me that The Rock's father isn't even from Canada. I'm not going to believe in nothing anymore.
That one's true.
We're the birthplace of The Rock's father. We were the first in the country to legalize that love is love. And ours is the province where Viola Desmond sat wherever she damn well pleased. Because of trade, we were the richest province of Confederation in 1867. And now, the rest of Canada is again following our interprovincial lead. Inspired by the Black Loyalists and the Trelawney Maroons, we will not be bullied by those that look to oppress us. We were the first province in Canada, the first port of call for generations of new Canadians, and we will never be the 51st of anything. My name is Tim, and I am Nova Scotia.
What do you think of that?
He's running.
Really?
Yeah, for the first 2 minutes, it just seemed like pandering to locals and why he's already premier. And then when you're like, no, we're leading the way of the premiers and interprovincial, and we're not going to be the 51st state, that's very clearly introducing, what is the point of this video otherwise?
That's a great question. What is the point? I don't know. It got me fired up. I mean,
did it touch you in your, Eastern soul?
And he went deep in the Nova Scotia lore, like the, Ma Webb's and stuff like that. That's really deep stuff.
But what do you think the point of that was at this moment?
I don't know. I don't see that as being evidence of a run. Like, he doesn't say I'm running. Maybe I'm naive in expecting politicians to, if they want to do something, they'll say they're going to do it.
He was just asked outright at a press conference, and he has this, little boy's grin.
Like an impish look.
So are you interested in the federal leadership?
No, I'm focused on I'm focused on Nova Scotia. Moving forward this province, there's a lot we can do in this province. That's my focus.
You said no in front of that. You mean no? No means no?
To what?
To the federal leadership. Oh,
I'm focused on Nova Scotians, you guys. That's pretty clear.
He's blushing. He's like, I don't know. And they're like, well, will you rule it out? And he's like, I don't know. I'm a naughty little who's to say what I'll do next? And James, our producer, reminds us that this came out days before the election. And it went viral. It was 2 million views. When it was looking increasingly clear that Poilievre was going to lose. And
guess who was in town during this?
Tell me.
Pierre Poilievre.
On his only stop.
And guess who was not at that event?
Tim Houston.
Mr. Nova Scotian himself.
Should anything be made of the timing of your release?
I think it was just a pure coincidence.
Come on.
Nobody's being super forthright about their ambitions, but there does seem to be some tensions there. Let me give you an example of this headline here from the Globe and Mail. Ontario, Nova Scotia premiers say Poilievre must mend fences among conservatives. And then one from Global News, Poilievre's conservatives must do, quote, soul searching after election loss. One from the CBC, Houston says he's, quote, focused on Nova Scotia, end quote, amid rumors he's seeking Polyev's job. One from CTV News, quote, we already see that the knives are out. Provincial Tories take aim at the CPC election campaign. And finally, from the National Post, Doug Ford, Tim Houston defend decision to not help federal Tories during election.
The other thing I thought from all this was like, huh, is Ford backing Tim Houston here? And if so, what about the early speculation that Ford himself may have had designs on running the Conservative Party of Canada?
Well, as we've established, I'm not super good at interpreting this stuff, so why don't we throw to Doug Ford?
All right, let's hear what Doug Ford had to say when he was asked before the election about the video and about the possibility, before Pierre's body was even cold, of a Tim Houston leadership bid.
I was busting his chops with Scott Moe and myself. We're busting his chops this morning. I can't tell you, but I told him I love it.
Did people are interpreting it as maybe dipping his toe in the waters of testing a potential future CPC leadership bid? What do you think of that?
I love. Well, you know something. Let's see what happens. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, and let's see what happens on the 28th. But that's. That's what I can say about that.
The little smirky thing they're doing, I kind of hate it. Like, it reminds me of when Taylor Swift makes a new Instagram post and the fans will be like, oh my God, there's two guitar strings on the floor in the back. That means there's an album coming out on the 2nd of next month.
So is this just what they say it is, like an overture for more of a united front between the provincial conservatives and federal? Or is this like some kind of a putsch or the early signs of one? I did note that at that same press conference, Tim Houston was asked, this is always the question in Canada if you want to find out if somebody has their eye on federal politics, are you learning French?
Had you taken any French lessons? I just you'd be surprised how many people have brought that up with me.
He says,
"Un peu."
A little?
Yeah, that means a little.
Okay,
and
thank
I assume.
All right.
Yeah, really tough relief. Question there. Yeah. Wait, so you're learning French technically?
Yeah,
so maybe
who knows? Maybe I'm running.
Yeah, maybe.
It's that time, Julian. We are going to duly note some stories that people may have missed. What do you have for us today?
I have a story that came out from the Canadian Press. The headline is Canadian musicians face volatile tour life under Trump. So this is talking about the visa challenges and the problems crossing the border into the U.S. for musicians, specifically trans ones.
Everybody, I think, who's going to the States with anything work-related is feeling tense right now. Should I say that I'm just there for a vacation? If I mention that I'm there for work, is that going to be a problem at the border? Musicians, I'm aware, even before the current troubles, there was like, oh, do you have the right visa to work in the States? And now I have spoken to musicians who said, I'm just not going, which is like, it's a major thing for building up an American fan base. Canada is notoriously hard to tour in. Our cities are very far apart. And then I'm also concurrently aware that it's just not a good time to be trans in America.
Yes.
You combine those two things. And so what's the story? What's being written about here?
Yeah, it's basically just a compilation of trans artists who are like either getting denied at the border or having a lot of trouble going in, how it's limiting their career growth. And I was thinking about this for a few reasons. Number one, as I've talked about ad nauseum, I lived in the U.S. for the last few years. I was there on an H-1B visa that was tied to my job, and I watched it sort of progressively get harder to enter the country every time I came back from a vacation. And I'm someone who was going in on a proper visa with all the paperwork and stuff. I had a folder of this stuff every time I crossed. I'm not trans. I'm visibly Arabic. And we have a colleague who's entering into the U.S. right now. I'm concerned about their process of going through the border. And it's just something that's super top of mind and I think is not getting a whole lot of attention.
Duly noted. I want to duly note, I mean, I guess in a broader sense that like Indigenous issues seemed completely absent from this election. This was remarkable to me. I think it was less remarkable to Indigenous people who've told me like, yeah, this just always happens that there's moments where it flares up and people actually give a damn for a moment. And then if something else happens, it just disappears. So that's the broader point. The more specific point is this story from CTV. Here's the headline. This is unacceptable. Polling station problems prompt calls for investigation. It's just kind of a dull headline. What actually happened here? People were denied the right to vote.
What?
people were unable to vote way up north. Polling hours for voters to cast ballots in Quebec's Nunavik region during Monday's federal election were inconsistent across many communities and in some cases not open at all. They did not even open the polling stations.
What do you mean?
CTV has learned TV Tulagok was keen to vote in his first federal election, but his excitement was quickly dashed when he went to the polling station in his northern Quebec community of Ivujevic, only to find it was closed.
What?
Everybody was unable to vote in Ivujevic.
I'm looking at a CBC article right now that's a different version of the same story.
Yeah.
They've got a photo of a paper sign on the door that looks like it was printed out from a, like an inkjet printer. Federal election voting is closing at 2:30 p.m. due to unforeseen circumstances. There was a statement from Elections Canada, quote, in several cases, it was not possible to recruit local teams. In other cases, harsh weather conditions have prevented access to communities.
That is not an acceptable excuse.
No, and if that was happening in Toronto, it would have been a big deal.
The source at TV Tulagok is quoted by CTV as follows. This is not right. They took our votes away, and this is illegal.
Yeah, duly noted. And now I'm angry.
That's our show for today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. You can email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you email to me. I also post a little bit to Blue Sky. Julian, where can people find you?
I'm pretty active on Instagram. That's at Julian Abraham. Other than that, you can shoot me an email, julian@canadaland.com. Especially interested in news tips.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Canada Land's director of audio is Max Collins. Today's episode is fact-checked by Noor Azria. I'm the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called Syndications by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
C'est clair, il n'est pas déjà trop tard. Ah.